Good morning, everyone.
I wasn't quite sure how to take my speaking as an adventure. So I'm going to take it in the most positive light possible. And just so you know, it's an adventure for me because half the time I have no idea what's coming next. So it's usually an adventure for me as well. But this morning for me will be a little bit different. And I'd like to put a bit of a disclaimer on this message before I speak it, because I'm going to do something that I actually almost never do, because I think it's problematic. So I want to be really clear before I communicate what I want to communicate, because I wish that there were formulas in the Bible that every time you push the buttons, this thing happens. And so I want to be very careful. I want to share with you some principles from a passage that I think are very important. And I think that they are significant, and I think they're powerful. But in doing that, I want to be very clear that I'm not thinking that this is a formula that every time you press the buttons or pull the lever like a slot machine, somehow you get the right outcome. So I just want to say that up front. In saying that, though, I want to press into these principles in a fairly aggressive way, but I want to do it with that caveat, because if you leave here thinking that what I've said is if you do these five things, it'll always equal the result that we see in this passage, that would be really faith-wrecking for you. So are we on the same page? Does everyone understand? And I hope you understand my heart in saying that. I hesitate to say it because I don't want to take the blessing out of what I'm saying, but I want to be very clear. It honors me to say that before we start. And so what I want to do is, and I don't have a PowerPoint today. I am the PowerPoint. I'm fairly PowerPointish, so I'll be the PowerPoint. But if you have a Bible with you, or if you have a phone with you that has a Bible app on it, I'd like you to find a passage in the book of 1 Kings. That's the passage I want to read. 1 Kings, and we're going to be looking at chapter 18, specifically verses 41 to 46. And I'll give you a bit of a context for this when you get there, but 1 Kings 18, 41 to 46. And just before I read that, this is what I want to say to you. This is my heart for you today. I really have what I think is awesome news for you. It is really awesome news. And the news of this particular passage is that the rain is coming. That's the hopefulness of this passage. The rain is coming. And some of us have experienced tremendous seasons of drought in our lives. Those could be physical drought. Those could be emotional drought. It could be financial drought. It could be relational drought. But if you're anything like me over a lifetime now of 52 years, I've had seasons of great drought in my life in lots of different areas. Areas where there wasn't rain. But my hopefulness this morning is that a storm of goodness is on its way for you and for me, and that this drought, whatever this drought might look like for you, is over. It's coming to an end. But first, you have to believe and see the promise that lies in a speck on the horizon, in a tiny cloud. That's what this passage says to us. And so with that sense, let's read 1 Kings 18, 41 to 46. And I'm reading from the New Living Translation. It says this. Then Elijah said to Ahab. So what happened here is that they had gone through all this experience. A few chapters earlier, Elijah prophesied that a drought would come on the land. And in fact, it did. And we're now at this point in the story. In fact, we're 3.5 years into this drought. This drought has lasted 3.5 years. People are starving. They don't have enough food. It's a bad situation. Just prior to this, we have the whole episode of Elijah on Mount Carmel with the prophets, Baal, and all the stuff that's going on here. And immediately following this, Elijah says to Ahab, "Go get something to eat and drink, for I hear a mighty rainstorm coming." Now, again, I don't know how you read the Bible, but how I read it is, when words don't make sense to me, they get my attention. Because this is weird. I hear a mighty rainstorm coming. That's interesting. I know that sometimes, you know, my mom used to say she could feel a rainstorm coming in her bones. You know, that sort of, I don't know, that arthritic temperature change that caused her to say, I think it's going to rain tomorrow. You know, her little spidey sense of her bones would tell her it's going to rain. But he says something very interesting. Go get something to eat and drink. He's ultimately saying, go get prepared for something because I hear a mighty rainstorm coming. So Ahab went to eat and drink, but Elijah climbed to the top of Mount Carmel and bowed down to the ground and prayed with his face between his knees. And then he said to his servant, go and look towards the sea. And the servant went and looked and then returned to Elijah and said, I didn't see anything. 7 times Elijah told him to go and look. Finally, the 7th time, the servant told him, I saw a little tiny cloud about the size of a man's hand rising from the sea. And then Elijah shouted, hurry, go to Ahab and tell him, climb into your chariot and go back home. If you don't hurry, the rain will stop you. And soon the sky was blackened with clouds and a heavy wind brought a terrific rainstorm. Now, as I was thinking about this passage, first of all, want to be unusually positive this morning. Because there is a wonderful hopefulness in this passage that I personally need to experience. Because Pam and I have areas of drought in our life. We have areas where it seems bone dry, where it's seems desolate, where it seems hopeless, where it seems nothing good grows. We have areas in our life like that. It's not a platform that I would share every one of those with you today, but I want you to understand that we have areas of drought. We have areas of relational drought at times with our children. We have areas of financial drought that we've had over the seasons. Although we're not living in that drought season today, we've gone through tremendous drought seasons financially. And so I find in this passage an unusual hopefulness, and I find some principles that I could grab onto, but not in a formulaic way, not in a way that if I do all these things, we're always going to get rain out of that cloud. That is not what I'm saying. But I think there are some interesting things that Elijah does in this passage that actually is quite instructive for us. And what I want to do this morning is share 5 principles with you from this story that are helpful for me, and I hope they're helpful for you. And that's this, 1. What we see Elijah doing in the beginning of this passage is he says to Ahab, go get something to eat, for I hear a mighty rainstorm coming. Ultimately, what Elijah's doing, as far as I can see, is he's pronouncing. That's the first principle here. It's the pronouncement. He pronounces the hope of a better future, even though it's not here. He actually speaks of a more hopeful future. He says, I hear the rain coming. And it's dead dry. It hasn't rained for 3.5 years. And so there is this wonderful pronouncement that he makes. Now, for those of you who are into science at all, and the recent studies in neuroscience, and I believe that God creates all of it. And so there is something in the pronouncement of positive confession. Now, what it isn't is there, if I get in a car accident and my arm is severed, you know, saying, no, my arm is not severed, it's whole, that is not the positive confession stuff I'm talking about. That's not where I'm going. But there's something that happens in the human brain when we catalyze positive expectation and we vocalize it. It actually turns on the frontal lobe of our own brains. And it gets lit up with chemicals that begin to produce a sense of hopefulness, a sense of excitement, a sense of positivity. There is something that happens in the human brain. And there's amazing scientific research that's beginning to show this to you. Elijah didn't understand that. He didn't need to. But for me, it's a hopeful thing because when neuroscientists put people on these machines and they can take these deep scans of the brain, they actually can see these chemicals beginning to be released in people's brains, and it does something for them. And so in the midst of dry seasons, of drought, we're not saying if you just say it's raining, it is. That's not what this is saying. But there's something powerful in this pronouncement of what is not true. There's something that happens. And so the first thing I see in this is that when I get to a point in my life where it feels dry and it feels like I'm parched and I can't catch my breath and there's nothing to drink, there is something positive for me in that moment to stand in that moment and to look to a more hopeful future and to call it out, to pronounce it in advance. Now, does it magically make it happen in the heavens? No, I don't think so. But it makes it magically happen already in my mind, meaning I start to experience the euphoria of rain before I ever get there. There's something about it. You got to figure it out. I don't know exactly what it means. I don't have all the answers today, but I have some thoughts on this, and I think this is a really important part of it because I don't know about you, but what happens to me when I get in those dry and desolate times, I begin to get so overwhelmed, and my self-talk, internal and external, becomes so dry in and of itself. It is so not focused on a hopeful future. It is so not focused on what could be. It's all focused on what is and what's going wrong right now. And it's amazing, again, if you look at neuroscience, because what they're finding out is that when you cast a positive thought in your mind and you vocalize it, that you actually get a release of oxytocin into that frontal lobe of the brain, and it actually produces a positive expectation, a sense of energy and excitement, actually, but it lasts about this long. Conversely, when you catalyze your mind around negative things and negative outcomes, you also get a release of chemical in your brain that actually begins to produce hopelessness, depression, lethargy, and it lasts four times as long as that positive charge you get from the positive statement. Something happens in our brains and in our hearts when we focus on the drought. The drought gets deeper, darker, and more ominous to us. There's something in that. Now again, pronouncing there's rain when there isn't doesn't mean you're going to get wet when you go outside. But it does change something in us. And Elijah has a positive expectation. Now, we believe, and clearly we must understand, that Elijah has some revelation from God that this is true. But regardless of that, he starts with this pronouncement that I hear the rain coming. It's a positive pronouncement of hopefulness. And then he immediately doesn't just start confessing something. If you look at the passage, he gives advice to Ahab and to himself. He says to Ahab, go get something to eat and drink. And it says, then Elijah climbed up the mountain and began to pray. What I see in this is interesting. One, first of all, when we read this passage often, I think people give Ahab a little bit of a short stick here. Because the reality is that I want to say something. He did what Elijah commanded him to do. He went and ate and drank, and Elijah went to pray. And most of us, when we read this passage, will see Elijah's actions as more spiritual than Ahab's. But may I suggest, this is the part of the principle. It's called preparation. It's a pronouncement, and then Elijah says to Ahab, go prepare, get ready, because you're going to have to be on the move because the rain's going to come, and I'll go get ready too. And they prepared in different ways, but I think this tells me something. We need to prepare to receive the future hope of what we're looking for, both physically and spiritually. We need to get prepared to receive what's coming. It's not a passive waiting for that rain to come and break the drought in our lives. There's a positive pronouncement, and then there is a preparation that begins where we begin to prepare for that future thing that's going to happen. And it may be, frankly, if I have relational drought, maybe my preparation is to fix some of my own, I'd say a bad word right now, but I won't, garbage in my life. I've been told by my wife I need to be careful, you know. So, But maybe my preparation is I got to go clean up some stuff on the inside to get prepared for that new thing that's going to happen relationally. Maybe I need to go to counseling. Maybe I need to get my head on straight. Maybe I need to do something. But after I look into the future and see and pronounce a positive expectation, Elijah doesn't just wait idly then, frozen in posture, waiting for it to happen. He counsels Ahab and himself to get ready. And so he says, go and eat, go and drink, get ready for the journey. Something's going to happen. And then he goes and does the same. He goes to, and begins to prepare through prayer for this whatever is coming. And so it's a pronouncement, but then it's a preparation. Now, interestingly enough, I want to ask you something. If you don't go back to the passage, let me ask you your supposition on this. What do you think Ahab prayed for or prayed about? What does your immediate visceral response tell you he did when he prayed? What did he pray for? Elijah, thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. What did he pray for? We would say rain. Does the passage say that? It doesn't. We have no idea what he prayed for. But we have a supposition. He must have, through the fervent activity of his prayer, he must have called down that rain. It actually doesn't say that. We don't know what he prayed. He may have prayed for rain. He may have prayed for droplets. He may have prayed for a monsoon. Or he may have just prayed for himself and others to receive and respond to the new season that was coming. We don't know what he prayed, which is very interesting to me. Because, you know, if we knew, we'd probably have another piece of the formula that if we just push that button, we can make it happen. We don't know what he prayed for. Here's another question about the passage. How many times did he pray? What is our inclination would tell us if we read this passage? How many times did he pray? Does it say that? No, it says he prayed and he made his servant do the work and sent him up seven times to look. See, we love formulas. And just because the people went around the wall of Jericho seven times, we have the supposition that Elijah must have prayed seven times. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but the passage actually doesn't say that. But it's clear that he calls Ahab to prepare, and then he goes into prayer either to call down rain or to prepare himself or something, but he understands that there is spiritual and physical preparation for what's coming. And all I'm going to take from that is this. When I have a drought in my life, if it's relationally, the first thing I want to do is look at that situation, and I want to look through the dryness of it, and I want to look to a more hopeful future. And if that's something, a challenge with my children, or a challenge with my wife, or her challenge with me, or if it's my challenge with you because we have relational tension or we have a drought in our relationship, I want to look past the dryness of today to a more hopeful future, and I want to pronounce it in advance. I then want to begin to get prepared for it spiritually and physically, for that more hopeful future, that thing that's coming. There's something that happens in preparation. But I love this part of the story because Elijah does the praying and then he sends his servant to do all the hard work. And so he sends his servant up, you know, up to have a look, right? And he goes up the first time and what does he see? What does he see? Nothing. And he comes back down and he says to Elijah, I see nothing. And Elijah sends it back up again and he goes up again and what does he see? Nothing, and he goes up again, and what does he see? And when he goes up again, and what does he see? And he goes up again, and what does he see? And he goes up again, and what does he see? And finally, he goes up again, and he goes, hey, dude, there's hopefulness in the sky. There's a little cloud. It's microscopic, Elijah, actually. It's so tiny, I can hardly see it. It looks like a man's hand in the distance. Wow. And it's amazing because Elijah gets super pumped at this time. But here's what I see in that part of the story for me, is that you have to alter your perspective and take a peek because it's hard to see the little cloud in the horizon when you're down at a lower elevation. See, the mountains of your problems, of your issues, of your crap in your life, of the challenges in that drought for you, the economic mountain, the mountain of debt, whatever it is, it eclipses your ability to see that tiny cloud. And if you don't alter your perspective, if you don't actually be willing to get out of the circumstance somehow and take a peek, which takes a lot of faith and courage, because everything in you tells you there's nothing coming. Because it's 3.5 years. If anything, you know, it's not raining today. Because there's not a cloud in the sky. Everything in you says, no rain today. No breaking of the drought today. This is not happening. But until Elijah encourages his servant somehow to get up and alter his perspective and take a peek into the future, he doesn't see it. And for me and for you, I don't know, but so often I get so overwhelmed where I am that I can't see anything else. I can't see hopefulness. I can't see a better future. I can't see a better relationship with my wife. You can't see a better relationship with your husband. You can't see a better relationship with your kids. You can't see a more hopeful future for the church. You can't see world peace. You can't see the U.S. and South Korea going to war. You can't see it. You can't see any of it because you get overwhelmed by the circumstances that are around you, and there's something about being willing to get up and stretch your head over the obstacles and take a look. But you may have to do it 7 times. You may have to go up multiple times. And I don't know about you, but if I was his servant after 3 or 4 times and he said to go again, I'd be, hey, dude, there's nothing. I don't think you heard correctly. It's not happening today, Elijah. Look up. Do you see a cloud in the sky? No. Are you kidding me? You want me to go up there again and look? And I think that's what God is calling you and I to do in the midst of this circumstances of drought where we can't see. He's calling us to get our perspective elevated somehow, and that is super hard to do. Because in the midst of it, all I see is the dryness of the situation. That's all I see. And so I can't tell you how to do it. I don't know exactly. I don't have some magic formula to do it. But I do think that we've got to figure out how to get above the circumstances. We have to look with expectancy. And then it's kind of interesting because immediately when he sees that little cloud, that tiny cloud about the size of a man's hand, what does Elijah do? He immediately shouts and says, hurry to Ahab and tell him, climb into your chariot and go back home. If you don't hurry, the rain will stop you. It's amazing because when he sees a glimmer of hope, a glimmer, he proclaims it as if it's already done. It's like there's something about this proclamation in this piece. He proclaims the rain is coming in advance, and when he sees the first sign of hope, the first sign that that relationship is beginning to turn, the first sign that your economic drought is beginning to turn, the first time that the drought in our culture, society is beginning to turn, the first time that the drought here of the season of the vineyard is beginning to twist a little bit, we ought to look at it and be able to say, there's rain in that little cloud. The potential of rain is in the cloud. It is not in a barren blue sky, but it is in that tiny glimmer of hope. And Elijah was able to seize on that and say, guys, it's time to get ready. Let's go. Because there is rain in that cloud. And here's what I want to say to you this morning, is that in some of your areas of drought, every once in a while you see a glimmer of hope, but you do not rise up and receive it. You do not rise up and take it. You do not rise up and acknowledge it. And sometimes the winds evaporate that tiny hope and it's gone. There is something catalytic when we can grab onto that hope. It's like a tractor beam where he calls that little cloud forward through the proclamation, there's rain in that cloud, let's get going. And so in an unusually positive and hopeful position this morning, I want to say to you that if you've had economic drought for years, you got to look for the tiny cloud of hope and you ought to get yourself focused on that. Now, that does not mean that there's rain right now, but it does mean it's coming. And there's a great hopefulness in that, and you need that, and I need that, because if we lose hope, we will become shipwrecked. We will not find our way. And lastly, And I'll just recap just so we're clear. One, it seems like he pronounced something before it came. I don't understand all that. You can probably find some other Bible teacher who's much more eloquent on that with it, but there's something in there. He prepared, or they prepared physically and spiritually. He altered his perspective, and he took a peek, which takes a lot of faith. Because after a while, I stopped looking. I don't know about you. Do you ever stop looking? Do you ever want something to change and then just stop looking? I'm going to just be really honest for a second. I mean, I try to be honest all the time, but I hate when people say that. I'm really going to be honest right now, like I was lying before. My daughter most likely will not hear this, so I can say this. So we have a wonderful, beautiful, amazing older daughter. We've had a tremendous season of drought in our relationship. It has been stone dry. It has been difficult. It has felt at times that we've been eating dust. It has felt like it's barren, that there's tumbleweeds just blowing across that relationship at times. And I have not practiced well this passage, and I think this passage is more for me than it is for you, so if you get something out of it, awesome. I got lots out of it this week, so that's cool. What I recognized when I was meditating on this passage is that often I have missed the tiny glimmers of hope, and because of that, I have crushed it. I have blown away that cloud of hope because I never acknowledged it. Every once in a while, there's a glimmer of hope in my relationship with my daughter. And as a father, sometimes I've blown past it. I haven't acknowledged it. I haven't catalyzed my attention to that small glimmer of hope. And I've chose to look at everything else that's wrong. I've chose to look at all the other barrenness and all the other blue sky where there's nothing in it. And I've not seen that little cloud of hopefulness in our relationship. And maybe that's why the rain hasn't come. Maybe because I have refused to acknowledge the tiny little cloud in that relationship. I have said, that's not enough. There's no rain in that behavior. And maybe that's why we are so parched and barren in that relationship. Maybe it's not just about her. Maybe it is about me. Maybe my lack of ability to acknowledge and see the little glimmers of tiny hopes, the tiny clouds of relational rain, maybe that's why we've gone so long in that relationship and felt like we've been drinking from the earth. Maybe I have a part to play in that. And maybe if I would have catalyzed my attention to a hopeful act, maybe I would have called forth something in her and in us where we would have received the rain of relational connection before this time. Maybe it's not just about her. Maybe it is more about me. And then after seeing it, he proclaimed it again, and he began to prepare, and he told Ahab, get ready, it's coming, and he got ready. And lastly, this is the best part of the story, is you get to enjoy and embrace the promised precipitation. This story has such a hopeful ending. In the end of this, after 3.5 years of drought, they get to enjoy the promised precipitation that would begin to allow the land to flourish again. Now, what's really interesting to me is, you know, there's farmers here. So you would, the last thing a farmer wants at the end of drought is a monsoon rainstorm. Actually, when you think about it, that's not really what you want because it won't penetrate the ground very well, will it? It'll run off and it'll rush all your soil off. So I want you to, the irony of this story is interesting because the rain comes, but actually this particular rain isn't that helpful for the drought because it actually washes everything away, which I go, wow. See, for me, again, I'm a little bit of a dark lining guy in the silver cloud. I'm like, wow, that's not quite the rain I wanted, God. Like, I wanted a gentle rain that would water the earth and replenish and do it all. But this deluge come, and they got to run from it. So here's what I thought about that. And again, I'm not suggesting this is uniquely inspired because it probably isn't. It's probably born more of my own nature than it is from God, but this is what I said to myself when I read this. Tim, you need to embrace the promised precipitation even when it's not quite what you expected. See, I don't know about you, but I've got it all figured out. I know how I want it to come. I know what it has to look like. I know what that glimmer of hope needs to look like. I have it all down in my head. And when it doesn't come exactly the way I think it should, sometimes I miss it. And in the same way that I have the propensity to miss the hopefulness in the tiny cloud, sometimes I rail against the rain that God brings because it also doesn't come quite the way I wanted it. I am an evil man. I have a heart that is blackened because I want it a certain way. I see it happening a certain way. And when I was 15 years of age, I had become a Christian. And at 16, I felt like God had said to me, I live with my mom. I grew up with my mom in a single family home. My dad had left when I was young, and he was at that point out Western Canada. And at 16, I was reading from Corinthians, and it said to me this. It said, "You have the ministry. God has reconciled you to himself through Christ, and you have the ministry of reconciliation." And I began to get a sense that God was saying it was time to get my relationship reconciled with my father. And so I went with my mom. I was now the only boy remaining with my mother at home and said, "Mom, I feel like I need to move out from your house at 16. I need to go and live with Dad for a couple of years because I believe God is going to reconcile our relationship. But I need to go and do that." My mom, gracious woman, took me to see our pastor at the time, Paul Shantz, beautiful man at Faith Missionary Church. He was in his 80s, and I remember sitting in his office, and I remember my mom saying, "I don't know what to do, Paul. Should I let him go?" And I remember Paul saying, "Jesse, if God has asked this, then you must release him to do it." I remember sitting in the office. It was heartbreaking for my mom because I was the last child to be at home, and now I was leaving. And I had a sense of what the reign of relational reconciliation would look like in my family. I would go out, and it would be wonderful, and we'd have full reconciliation, and my dad would sit at my feet and repent for all the things he ever done bad to our family, and we'd be healed, and we'd be restored, and it'd be wonderful. And it didn't happen that way. I went out and I lived with my dad, and it was awkward and it was hard, and he was hard-headed and so was I because I was 16 and I knew everything. And when I asked him one day, when we finally got that heart-to-heart chat about the hurt that he had caused in our family, he looked me in the eyes and said, "Tim, get over it. I only did to you what my father did to me. Move on." That wasn't the reign of reconciliation I was looking for. But here's the twist in the story. Because, you know, sometimes God knows a little better than you do, and I do. And the relational twist in this is that as I left as a 19-year-old, a year later, although my relationship was not fully restored, I had a better sense of my father than ever. My dad suffered a massive stroke at the age of 56, and was a prisoner in his own body until 82 when he died, and he couldn't talk or walk. Which means if I would not have gone out and done that, I would never had a chance to hear my father's voice say anything to me. And so what I saw as a lack of relational reign breaking the drought in that relationship was actually a refreshment that I would never have received if I didn't do that. But it didn't come the way I expected, and therefore I didn't receive it. I didn't acknowledge it as a gift from God at the time. And only after I stared into my dad's eyes, as a man suffering three massive strokes and being in the hospital, looking into his eyes and recognizing he would no longer be able to communicate with me ever, it became clear to me that I had received refreshing, but I had not acknowledged it. Because it doesn't always come the way you expect. But my encouragement to you is today, and I don't know where you are in the story, and maybe you're not in the story, maybe it's all about me as it often is. Do you need to make a pronouncement of faith? Do you need to stand up where there is no rain and there is no clouds? And do you need to stand up this morning in that area of drought and pronounce something that is absolutely nonsensical, that has no connection to reality? Maybe that's where the story starts for you. Or maybe you have done that and now you need to be in a deep season of preparation, spiritually and physically, for that new thing to come so the drought will be gone. Maybe we need to start preparing physically and spiritually for what's going to happen on this property in the next season. Maybe we need to start it now because it's important. Or maybe you're past that point in the story and you're at a point where you got to muster up some energy and with faith climb up over your circumstances and take a peek at the future to find that little cloud on your horizon Maybe you need to get up here with binoculars or a telescope and start searching the clouds or the barren sky for that little tiny thing. Maybe that's where you are in the story. Or maybe you're at the point where you've already done that and you need to proclaim again and get it done. And maybe you're at the point of the story where your precipitation has already come, but you haven't understood it because it was different. It was different than what you thought it would be. Maybe that's where you're at in the story. So I want to ask you today, I'm going to invite you into this story. If you can find yourself anywhere in this narrative this morning, my encouragement to you is figure out where you're at in this story of the drought of your life. And then ask God, what's the pathway forward? Because I refuse to die in a barren drought land. I'm not going to die there. I am not going to die in the drought of the relation of a relational drought with my daughter. I will not do it. And I will find hopefulness even in the most ridiculously small cloud. Because that's where my hope lies. Because if there ain't no clouds, there ain't no rain. So as a response this morning, here's what I'd like to do. I'm going to invite Andy and Margaret Ellen and what's left of the band back. And I want to say something right now, and this is really important to me. You know, the spontaneous of the spirit that we experienced this morning is birthed in hard work and discipline. Because they learned that song, "There is a Cloud," just for me today, for you. See, what seems so spontaneous actually is born in hard work and discipline because there's a commitment to it. And I want to acknowledge that and say, man, I really appreciate that because that song was powerful. And it was powerful, but it was also well performed. And it can be both. And it can be both. And I want to acknowledge that. Here's what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to stand where you are. If we have some ministry team people, you can come to the front if you'd like. But this is how we're going to close. We're going to sing this song, "There is a Cloud." I'm going to ask you, if you can, to find yourself somewhere in the story and ask God, what is your response next? Now, very important, this is not a formula that you push the buttons and you're always going to get rain. Sometimes you do everything right, push all the buttons, and you get nothing. But that's just the way it is. But if you stop pushing and proclaiming and preparing, you will get nothing. That's the hopefulness of this story. You guys are awesome. I love you. So let's just stand together. And if you want prayer for anything this morning, please come and get some prayer. And I should have had a last pee. It's probably perspiration. It's my last pee today. So, Lord, we just come to you right now. And, hey, some of you may need to change your posture this morning. Some of you may need to get on a chair. Maybe some of you need to do something physical to represent what you were responding to. Lord, we thank you for the narratives in the Scripture that help us forward in our lives, Lord. We ask, Lord, for wisdom from this passage and an understanding of how to respond. But more than anything, Lord, we proclaim together this morning, we have awesome news. The rain is coming. A storm of goodness is on its way. The drought will be over. And this is our prayer, Lord.
Just before we start into this last song, I think that there is a deep resonance. I know it's a deep resonance for me, but I think there's a deep resonance for our community. And I think that I think that acknowledging a season of drought is okay. And a gratitude that we, you know, many of us have walked through a season of drought together, faithfully hanging on to the hope of a cloud, you know. So can we just take some time? If you need to go, if you need to pick up your kids, you can. But can we take a time? We're singing that song, right? Is that the song we're singing? The cloud song? Okay. Own it, but if we can actually lift this up with regards specifically to this family as well, this community, because God is not done with us. He's just not. And there's lots to say about that. But can we lift up the song as intercession and contending for us as a community of people who have a purpose of the kingdom woven right into the DNA of who we are. And then we trust God to empower us for whatever the next thing, whatever it looks like to send people up to the mountaintop or to go and prepare and get food and water or whatever that next thing is. But I just felt like I couldn't not share that as we step into this.